You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 139. This episode, Green Lantern Earth 1, Volume 1. This episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/lanterns. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Mateo, joining me today on this special review of Green Lantern Earth 1 is Brandon West.
Yo.
Naim Siddiqui.
How's it going?
And Eric Cahill.
I'll answer Naim. It's all right.
Good. It's good.
And yes.
I didn't ask, so I just, you don't have to tell me.
No, I wasn't trying to. I was just saying it's good that it's all right for you.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, I like to hear that then.
Yeah.
I honestly didn't even know what the hell the joke was, and it was like a bit that I didn't know.
I asked how it's going, and you glossed over, so Eric answered
my
question.
Because it didn't matter.
Right. So Eric
wow,
told me how it's going for
way.
Him, and I appreciate
how.
Knowing how it's going for Eric, and that it's going well for him.
I agree that it doesn't matter how Frankie's doing. I think it matters a lot.
No, who cares about how Frankie's doing?
No one cares about how I'm doing. But we are your podcast that brings you everything you need to know about the Green Lantern Corps, things of such as Hal Jordan and his new rise in the Earth One titles that have been very popular since Superman Earth One, done by J. Michael Straczynski, Grant Morrison's Wonder Woman Earth One, and Jeff Johns' Batman Earth One. Green Lantern is a new line that just started for the Earth One series. But we have no other news to talk about. Isn't that right, Brandon?
This is a special edition. We don't do news on these.
Is our spotlight
awesome
episode.
Special edition of the show. So screw whatever mainstream news we usually talk about. Let's just dive into it.
Yeah, fake news. Yeah, let's beat that joke to death.
Yeah, nothing special except for the title we're talking about today, which was written by I'm forgetting the name right now. It is
Karina Becko.
And Gabriel Hartman. Art by Gabriel Hartman as well. So, again, like I was saying before, it is the latest in the run of the Earth One series. Next to also, I also forgot to mention, Teen Titans also has an Earth One, which is very popular.
Yeah,
has two volumes right now. Superman has three, Batman has two, Superman has one. But I would definitely say check out the Teen Titans Earth One volumes next to also this Green Lantern Earth One title, which just came out. The story pretty much, just to break it down in the simplest form, is a retelling. It's basically the retelling of Hal Jordan's origin story. Brand new, more and more contemporary, and a more, I guess, grounded way of showing us a Hal Jordan that does not have a guiding light and then becomes a Green Lantern in a world that never knew what a Green Lantern was. Even more so than normal comic continuity where, you know, Green Lanterns on Earth have never really been a thing until we know about Alan Scott or Hal Jordan, depending on which continuity we know about or we're shown through. This one itself has familiar settings, Kilowog, Oa, Orisia, differently. You know, we get to see our same Green Lanterns that we know, like, you know, we've always known, but in new and different ways, more assertive ways, more also subverted ways. Sinestro, for one, is a very subverted in this book. We also get to experience what this world, this new universe is as a world that doesn't knows what a Green Lantern is, but also feels like it is a myth. It has been relegated to a myth. It hasn't really been the Green Lanterns aren't in full force as they are in regular continuity, such as, you know, two lanterns per sector, 7,200 sectors per use. It makes everything a little bit more tight and more smaller in scale, even though it is still a universal story. Of people having to come together and rally against the Manhunter threat, which is prevalent in this book. Again, it's very small scale yet big picture type thing. And I, for the most part, very much enjoy it. Karina Becko is very like tries to ground Hal Jordan in a way that makes him seem a little bit more relatable than just being his test pilot, even though again, he is still an astronaut. But it does try to ground his character in a way that pretty much like just trying to figure out what he wants to be. Doesn't want to go back to Earth. Doesn't want to be ground like stayed more into a world that he doesn't understand anymore, and trying to reach for the stars. And then when he gets there, completely lost by it and doesn't know what to do. Tries to find something. Tries to latch on something. Befriends like someone he never thought he would befriend, an alien Kilowog, and then is drafted into a war that he never knew even existed until that no one really knew was happening, which is something that was just happening. Again, interesting. I do enjoy it, but it's also stuff we've already seen before. Like this is still Green Lantern, even in its core, it's pretty much the same story. We've seen this in many ways. I relegate it to Emerald Dawn, the storyline where Hal Jordan becomes a Green Lantern and has to fight the yellow monster, the yellow, enemy of Green Lanterns, a yellow robot. It is very similar in that tone of just how Jordan doesn't know what he's doing, has to make up for the mistakes that he needs to make up for, and then has to fight an overwhelming force that everyone says that he cannot, overcome, and then does so because of sheer will. That's my take on it. It's a very good read. I definitely recommend buying it. I definitely recommend reading it in the Earth One series. It is probably my third favorite right now, behind Wonder Woman and Earth One Superman, which the top will still be the Teen Titans book. Naim, what did you think of this issue, of this book itself?
One thing that I do like about the whole Earth One concept is where the monthly comic books are more like episodes of a serialized TV show or serialized TV show. These are more, I don't want to say cinematic because they don't necessarily have a cinematic feel, but they do feel like a movie in the fact that this is a contained story. It's 120 pages. Compared to a comic book, which is 22 pages, and if you equate a page to a minute, 22 pages, 22 minutes is the average length of a 30 minute TV show. 120 minutes is about the length of a movie. So you have that sort of feeling of a film. Although it is, it does also have the added benefit of the comic book medium and knowing for sure that they're going to have another volume, pretty sure at the very least that they're going to have a second volume, as opposed to again a movie that has to prove itself at the box office and stuff like that. So I do like the sort of one and done story of this, and basically everything I'm going to be saying is stuff that's in every Earth One book, which is. You have the feeling of this is a story from beginning to end that will then continue on to another story that, uses this as reference, but isn't beholden to something else. In addition to that, this story, I don't know, it's nice that it's not beholden to another continuity, right? So they know what the beats are of Green Lantern, what the Green Lantern does, what the ring does. And they take the general of that, and also, character names like Hal Jordan, like Kilowog, like Arisia, who makes an appearance, designs. You see an alien who looks like Salak, whether or not it is him, is not mentioned in the book, and the Guardians and stuff like that, and the Manhunters. And you take those ideas and you say, okay, we know these ideas exist. We use these ideas because they're part of the mythos, but they're not necessarily part of our story. So it is again like a movie in that way, but where even a Green Lantern or Wonder Woman or Batman or Teen Titans movie is beholden to the comic book continuity in a way that I think Earth One isn't, where, you know, if you made this exact comic book a movie, Green Lantern fans would be pissed because it's like, well, this is not the Green Lantern storyline, right? Like, they took this and went way off base with it. But the fact that they can do it in a comic book, say, look, this is an alternate universe, this kind of thing affords them the ability to, you know, to do something different with a concept that we know well. I don't know, I found it in general interesting. I thought it was pretty enjoyable. I'm not a huge fan of Gabriel Hardman's art style. I thought it was fine. It was functional. But in general, you know, I thought it was a little bit rougher around the edges than I would have liked. It's just not my personal taste. I also thought that while the pacing was not bad, I think the whole the sense of time could have been a little bit better, because some things, like when he's in the prison camp, I wasn't sure if like that was the course of a couple days, a couple weeks, a couple months. I wasn't sure even what I was supposed to feel like it was, whether I was supposed to feel like this was 3 days or 3 weeks or 3 months or 3 years.
I was going to agree with you on the third act, basically. Like, this, yeah, that was pretty much like the third act. And there was some pacing problems at that point.
Like,
so I do agree with you.
I certainly got a sense of time that Kilowog and Hal were going around for a long time searching for Green Lanterns, and that was mostly based on Hal's beard growing. But then his beard stopped growing while he's in the prison camp, and I'm like, is it supposed to be a very short period of time, or is it his beard just stopped growing? Like, I wasn't sure whether it was a week or a month or a year. I guess based on the fact that his beard wasn't growing that much, that it was like a week, but maybe not. Like, I it's just that earlier in the second act, they made it clear that I could tell how time was passing by the fact that Hal's beard was growing, and the fact that his beard stopped growing in the third act made me feel like, okay, so it wasn't that long a time. He wasn't really in prison for very long. I don't know. But otherwise, like, I thought in general, besides the fact that I lost a little bit of a sense of time, you know, the story in general, I thought worked. I just would have liked to been a little bit more clear on the time. I didn't need exactly 3 weeks later, just like some time later, or, you know, months later, weeks later, just something that made it clear to me how long it's been.
I understand that. I mean, to be completely honest, like, to explain that part, maybe I would say that he probably wasn't there for that long of a period of time, only because his ring charges like a few days later in terms of, like, you know, of timing. Like, right, if he was in that camp for a long period of time, or 3 weeks period of time, or a month, it would have been weird that his ring there charged like almost immediately while he was just staying there.
I think it wasn't it supposed to be that it charged because he ended up close to the battery. He didn't realize that. Like, so he could have been on the planet for months. He just never went near the battery before.
Right, and then, for like some sort of rotation. I don't know.
He could have been doing it in one place for 3 months, and then a month, like, you know, suddenly he's in this place. But, and also,
the passage of time.
I also thought it was kind of that maybe there was like a little bit of energy seeping out. Not that he got specifically close to it at that moment, but that might have just been
me. It's not exactly clear.
Yeah, it's not clear. I don't think it specifically needs to be clear. It wouldn't have hurt for it to be clear. But the passage of time would have been nicer to be a little bit clearer. Like, you know, I don't know.
Brandon, what do you think of the story?
I'm gonna spend this time basically not counterpointing, but just piggybacking off of what you two have said already, because obviously, it's not that deep of a story. It's what we've seen before. And I don't think it's so drastic that Green Lantern, typical Green Lantern fans, or the general Green Lantern fans, would be so upset if they did see this in theaters. When this novel starts, it's so slowly paced that I really enjoyed it. It felt like the beginning of every Alien movie where it's like really slow, or any Ridley Scott movie for that matter.
I agree with you very much on that point. I did want to kind of point, like, you know, Nine, when he was talking about, like, if Green Lantern fans saw this in theaters, that they would be upset about it. And I honestly don't think that. I think it would have. I don't know. Again, fans are divisive. I can't say it for everybody. But I will say for myself, I probably would have enjoyed seeing this as a movie. I would have enjoyed
seeing this as a movie, but this as a movie with Green Lantern on the title, it's like, well, they deviated. I would feel like they took too many liberties with the character.
With the
mythos.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, without stepping on what Brandon was saying, I agree with Naima. In terms of, like, I think we have actually seen, and I'll get to it later, but we've seen, like, many iterations in the last few years of Green Lantern's origin story, and there's a lot of kind of carryover elements that this kind of deliberately ignores. And so in terms of, like, a lot of times we see the movies, we see that as, like, a distillation or a definitive version of the character, and I would agree that if they did the movie like this and they kind of bypassed a lot of the cool stuff, like Abin Sur and all that cool stuff, it would have kind of been like, oh, that's not really what it's about. I think it works in this medium, but I don't think it would. I agree that it's like, if you did a Green Lantern movie and he didn't get the ring from Abin Sur, I'd be like, that's fucking dumb.
He still technically does get the ring from Abin Sur. I will say
no,
that.
He gets the ring from a guy named Volkov.
Yeah, he does get the ring from Abin Sur.
I meant the actual mythos act. But it'd be kind of like if Batman, you know, a Batman movie started and his parents were killed by, like, a train, and we found that the train was run by an asshole or something. I'll get into it later, but yeah, I agree that I see exactly what Naim is talking about.
Okay.
So, I took the liberty of looking up what DC, wanted to do with the Earth One novels. And it's simply, the Earth One line is introducing a number of DC's heroes to a new generation.
Yeah, I think that's total bullshit.
The ultimate DC.
Yeah. Yeah, right. No, I think that's, they could have done something like that. I don't think that's what they did at all. Like an Ultimate Comics version of it, like that, because what you described is Ultimate Comics, and I think that's just a completely different thing, right? I don't think anybody's just going to be waiting 2 years or 3 years for an Earth One novel to come out.
I don't think anyone is waiting on these novels. I think we're gifted, like. The wait for Wonder Woman was ridiculously long, right? We're still waiting on Frances McDormand to drop Aquaman.
It wasn't. The wait for Wonder Woman was only a couple months longer than it was for any other Earth One sequel. Oh, you mean for the first one, though?
We haven't gotten the second Wonder Woman book.
Right, it's coming out later this year. Sorry, you meant for the first one.
Yeah. No, the first one. Anyway,
the first one was, well, I think wasn't the first one rebranded? Wasn't Grant Morrison just basically working on a Wonder Woman story, and eventually they said, let's just turn this into Earth One Wonder Woman?
Right. And it was so different from what they viewed as what they wanted for the Earth One line that they almost changed it to another series complete, to an All-Star Wonder Woman.
They should have. Yeah, they really should have. Yeah. Yeah.
So my point is, I go into this with zero expectations, because the only Earth One book that I have read was the Wonder Woman title. So I go into this with zero expectation on what DC wants and what a new reader would like to see from Green Lantern. I'm going into this with whatever Green Lantern history I have and hoping for a good story. That's it. And I think they delivered on that. I think while Kuhan doesn't enjoy the art style, I think it reminds me of Brian Wood's DMZ book he did with Vertigo. I think Riccardo Bertielli or something like that was the artist on there. Or Eduardo Risso, who did 100 Bullets. It's that kind of style, that gritty style, but there's enough. Like, I forget who the colorist is on this. Is it Jordan Boyd? Is that the colorist?
Oh man,
I'm on the cover. Yeah, Jordan Boyd.
Jordan Boyd is the colorist in this novel, and I think he shines when you get to the brightness of the novel. When you see Kilowog's, it was Bolovac Ek or something, or V.
Bolovac Vic. Hold on, that's not a new thing. That's been his planet for the last.
Okay, let's show my Green Lantern knowledge.
To be fair, Bolovac Vic has been destroyed in and out of continuity for almost 40 years.
Well, that's why.
Many times it's been Sinestro.
It's erased from Brandon's memory whenever it's destroyed, so that's really the problem.
Well, that's true. Much like everyone's memory of Kyle's mom. No one remembers.
Kyle's poor murdered mother.
Murdered mother. That's a nice joke.
Anyway, I was getting back to praising Jordan Boyd and his beautiful coloring. And what, like, he takes a gritty looking book or gritty pencils from Gabriel and brightens them up or darkens them to where the beginning of this novel feels like a Ridley Scott movie. But once they get to Bolivac Ev,
Bolivac's Vic.
Bolivac,
no, it's Ev.
No, Ev is, oh, is no, Kilowog's last name. It's Kilowog's last name is Ev.
Whatever. Whatever. Anyway, once they get to Bolivac Vic, it feels like brightness, you know? And there are cinematic moments all throughout this novel. Like when Hal first starts talking to Kilowog and they go through this whole thing, and then he's like, teach me. Like, I'm like, oh, what a great surprise, you know? It's like, it's not necessarily a 180, but it's such a changing moment that it's one of the moments where I debated with myself, would the fans hate to see this if this was a movie? Hate to see this moment. And I was like, how could you? Like, because it's so different, but it's so fun. And then when Kilowog gets to rehashing essentially what becomes the villainous plot of the story, it's where the novel takes a nosedive for me. Because from that point on, it just feels like all action all the time, and it's not enough character moments after that. I'm sure Hal gets a couple moments, but then from there, the pace just ramps up. You don't get as many up close and personal shots of the characters. It's everything from then just feels like action, action, action. It's like they ran out of pages because they started out with this goal to tell this long, dark sci-fi story. And then it's like, oh shit, we only get 140 pages. Let's go. And that's what they did. I mean, and to their credit, they made it work. They condensed it certainly to where it works. But I feel like once you leave Kilowog's planet, that's it for the drama. And after that, it's just balls to the wall action, and it really didn't do anything for me. I will say there are some other cinematic like moments or creative decisions that I enjoy. Hal not actually having a costume or any of the Lanterns having a costume. I enjoy seeing Aresia being a leader elsewhere and how Hal volunteered her services because of that sole reason. I don't think everybody else should have been okay with that, seeing as they don't know her from Adam. But yeah. Otherwise, there were some really cool moments here and there, but I feel like not necessarily the passage of time, but the pacing just ramped up way too fast for me, and it really killed a lot of the joy I was having from the beginning of the novel.
Sure. Well, I would say real quick, I think, and that's a thing that happens in a lot of movies, and that's certainly not necessarily a good thing, but it is something that happens that you'll see where it's like, okay, we're gonna have this slow paced thing of building up, figuring out the characters, doing all this. And then, oh shit, we need to have an act three.
Definitely you're reviewing that part. I was like, again, I do agree with like both you and Brandon's statement on, like, you know, the pace of the story. Especially like it starts very slow, very slow. And I very much enjoyed, like, you know, us getting to know, I mean, that's pretty much what the point is, us getting to know a little bit more time with Hal. Like,
are we considering act two to be from the time he meets Kilowog to the time
ends up on Oa, presumably would be if it was a movie, but act two to act three is kind of a bleed. That's really the big problem with this structurally and stuff, that's the problem. You can't really see a three act thing, and that's kind of the problem with the Earth ones in general. I mean,
sure, everyone has a beginning, middle, end, like, you know, story, like, you know, their start
they have
point,
beginnings
their conflict,
and they don't have middles.
And the middle's supposed to be the conflict. The middle's supposed to be, like, you know, they're having a problem and they have to get through it.
Right.
And then, you know, the actor, and it's pretty much what this three-act structure is, you know. It's not knowing his way, him figuring out something and then having a problem, and then him overcoming that problem and becoming the person he's supposed to be. But yeah, Eric, what do you think of the story?
Well, thanks, yeah. I was going to say, I talked about this with Frankie before, but the idea that what are these Earth ones really like? And we were saying they're sort of written like movies, but they're more like TV movies, which they don't really do anymore, but like TV pilot movies. Where like there's this sense where it's like they're not quite cinematic enough structurally, but they do look like they're written in order to kind of continue a series and stuff, you know, but they're a little bit too thick for episodes. And I think that's kind of like what's interesting about it is, you know, in terms of like Hollywood and blockbusters and stuff, people are always kind of complaining there's like lack of an auteur. There's always
screenwriters. It's like one of the bad seasons of Sherlock.
Sure.
There's only one bad season of Sherlock.
But yeah, I think there's actually five bad seasons. Yeah. anything that's not the first season of Sherlock. But in Hollywood, it's like they write, there's 500-600 screenwriters on one movie and stuff. And I think these are actually, the Earth ones in general, are good examples of kind of why that is. Because you look at them all and they all seem like that exactly. Oh, we want to write a Green Lantern movie. But there's a lot of structural and weird issues with it that are probably just by the nature of trying to cram a lot into 120 pages. Like, that's what I think this was the problem with this one. But it's one of those things where, like, if you write it and draw it or direct it, right, like, you're like, oh, this is the thing. But if somebody comes into, like, as a piece of entertainment and, like, as a franchise starter, this is gobbledygook. You know, but like, you don't have that person saying you're gobbledygook except for the editors of comic books, and they're all dummies anyway, right? So, but anyway, I think the strongest idea is like that it's essentially the ultimate DC universe, right? Like, maybe it's really dated now, but like, I don't know, I'm afraid to go back and look, but like Ultimate Spider-Man was like my all-time favorite superhero run, like, ever. Like, you know, it was like such a great idea and oftentimes very well executed, you know. And I think when Straczynski did the Superman Earth ones, I really got that vibe from them. And then Geoff Johns's Batmans are actually kind of fun, but they basically seem like you have to know a lot about Batman for them to make any sense. And like the whole premise of each of those is like, what do we know about Batman that we can do a little different? Like, that's like the, every page is like, oh, it's the girl Two-Face. Oh, Harvey Bullock is handsome. Like, everything is like a Joe. The first time Batman and Commissioner Gordon meet, he knocks his tooth out and stuff. Like, it's all like, oh, that's slightly different. And
I'll say real quick, because this is actually the only Earth one I read. So I'm in a similar boat of Brandon, but with Batman and Superman, like, everybody knows a lot about Batman and Superman. You know?
Well, sure,
like,
sure. But I mean,
so ingrained in the culture.
No,
Green Lantern,
I think
Green Lantern, you can not have to do everything.
No, and I think they all have, like, I think Teen Titans is another example of like how much of a TV movie it really was and stuff. And then that's why Wonder Woman is such a weird one, because it's basically like a bunch of ideas that Grant Morrison had about Wonder Woman that he put into a book that is very much so not a TV show or very much so not a movie. So it all gets a little weird. This I found very interesting because of how what it really felt like was that the two writers had all these interesting ideas about Green Lantern, and they deliberately did things very different just to do them differently. And then they also did things really close just to do them really close. Like, I like the idea that they didn't have costumes, but it was really kind of odd, not odd, but I guess that the ring was the classic ring. Like, it wasn't like a cool new version with a slight like indent or something, or like a space tech version, or like a rock that you can't see. Like, no, it was a straight up cartoon lantern drawing on the ring, you know. And yes, even though the lanterns look spacey and the space lantern, everything looked really spacey and cool, but that was, so it's like this weird thing where he's like, well, I'm gonna make the origin as far from the origin as I can while still having it kind of close but also doing something different. So anyway, I think the general consensus that I agree with is that the first chunk is much more interesting than the last chunk, and I think that has to do again with pacing. I think he probably wrote it a certain way and then got to a certain point, like, I gotta wrap this up, and he just threw all this shit in there and stuff. Like, there is this kind of like space junkie aliens vibe, and I like, one of the biggest weaknesses for me is the way it ends, because it kind of like, as the story goes on, Hal becomes so interested in his protecting the greater universe, and then it ends with him going back to Earth to kind of squash out the admittedly huge issues that he was having on Earth. But like, it seems like he sort of like forgets, like, he says, we got to start the Green Lantern Corps and defeat the Manhunters, but first I got to go to Earth and take care of shit for about a decade, you know. And it's like, it seems like a weird kind of turn of stuff, but I like that the, you know, that, and it was funny because I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but like, I like how it starts and you first meet Hal, and it's almost like this Geoff Johns-esque characterization where it's like, we're going to go to Earth, and Hal like stops, looks at the camera and goes, no, fuck Earth. I hate Earth, which is like the kind of like famous Geoff Johns characterizations where when you first meet a character, they'll give you a sentence that encapsulates everything you're about to learn about them throughout the series and stuff. But I like that they're like space truckers and stuff. But even the idea of like having no costumes, it almost seems like they made him a deep space future astronaut just so they can give him a costume that kind of looks like the Green Lantern costume without giving the Green Lantern costume. But then that idea doesn't stick through the rest of it at all, you know? And then like I appreciated it, but like it's weird how like there's this subtle sense that Earth is like a post-Trump Earth where it's like they make a point, say we only have a one-party system. There's that woman that doesn't get a job and it's implied because she's a minority or because she's a woman or gay or something. So like – and then at the end – and there's this weird sense of like a false flag nuclear attack that Hal was involved in and stuff. So that's kind of interesting, but it is so far removed from the kind of classic elements of Green Lantern. And I think this book, the beginning is interesting because it is kind of like an Aliens, like space horror movie. And then when you go to Bowl of Exvic and you meet Kilowog, I really like that they took Kilowog's characterization. I don't know if they did it on purpose, but Kilowog initially was kind of a friendly scientist that turned into this gruff taskmaster because of how he looked. Like the whole fun of him was how smart he was considering how big he was. And I like that they went back to that kind of sweet characterization of him. And I like that he was like the whole idea that Hal's like, teach me. And Kilowog's like, fucking teach me. I don't know shit. Like, you know, that was kind of a fun characterization and stuff. And then even showing the other Bolivaxians, whatever, showing up in the cool space suits and them kind of booking it out there. But at that point, the story kind of goes all over the place. Like it just – it's hundreds of ideas hitting at the same time. Yeah. They cover them. He meets one Green Lantern and we spend 20 pages with him, but then he meets like 10 more in the span of three pages, you know, and all of them are interesting and different characters and stuff. And like even at the end when he's like, we got to give Arisha control, I was like, I just feel like the book was telling me you wanted to give Kilowog control. So why are you giving Arisha – like just – and then at the end, when you start to see tons of cameos by other Lanterns, when Sinestro starts to show up, and you're just like, "What? Did you just throw him in here because you felt the need to throw Sinestro in here and stuff?" You know, and then Salak shows up and stuff. So there's just it's so messy in the last quarter and stuff, and then the storytelling stops sort of making sense. Like it's not really clear. Like we were just arguing about why Hal's ring starts to work, and then basically, I suppose it's we don't know if it's Gantt or if it's what's his name? Krona, whatever, who the last guardian is. And he basically says, Hal, you got to destroy Oa. And then Hal's like, oh, God, this is my conflict for the last 10 pages. And then he tells the other Lanterns, like, listen, we could say that, but only if we destroy Oa. And then, like, some random dude walks up and is like, no, I'm a physicist. That math doesn't work. Let's do it differently. Like, how are we going to do it? And then they cut away and then they just do it.
Hold on. Why didn't they talk to the physicist earlier? Like, they should have introduced him in the montage where they're talking to a bunch of other Lanterns. It made so much more sense. I didn't even think about that until right now.
The funniest thing about, like, the Guardian coming out of the Lantern, immediately I thought, isn't that the Flash from, like, you know, Batman vs. Superman? It's just the exact same sequences coming out of it.
Lois Lane, she's the key!
It's too late. People will already hate the Justice League because of Zack Snyder. Don't bother to edit it.
Am I too late? Am I too late?
No, and then, like...
No, just get Joss Whedon to CGI off Henry Cavill's mustache.
But why not just have... that beat, because there's no real crowning moment of success. Like it's totally undercut by that moment because they set it up where you don't know and then you meet that one guy and he's like, Lanterns were just as shitty as the Manhunters, and then you're like, oh, you're setting up this kind of conflict. And then at the end, Hal is supposed to be like, well, maybe it's what we make it, and maybe it's yes, the ring. And I like the idea that they remove the idea that the rings go to worthy people. Like literally, any asshole can pick up the ring. And I like that Hal was like, yeah, any asshole can pick up the ring. So that's why it's even more important. Blah blah. And like. They don't sell those kind of emotional character moments. And like I said, the crowning moment of success at the end is like so offhand because Hal is like, all right, I got a plan. We got to blow up the whole planet. And someone's like, no, that plan is dumb. Here's my plan. And then they cut away and then come back. And then the plan is worked. And then it's like, it's weird thing. And then the storytelling is a little awkward because then it works. And they're like, oh, it worked. And then they look at Kilowog like, oh, you did it to Kilowog or something. And he's like, oh, because he just woke up. And I'm like, did he protect you? Like, what happened to this panel breakdown? Where it doesn't make a lot of sense. So that,
and then the planet is blowing up.
And then the planet is blowing up. So I don't understand. I think what they should have done was had a moment where the planet was going to explode, but then Hal was like, no, I think we can stop that or something. Like, you know, or Kilowog would – I was actually – there was at least two points where I thought Kilowog was dead. And then I was actually – can you hear me? Sorry. I was actually bummed out because I was like, oh, I actually really like Kilowog in general, and I really like this version of Kilowog, so I hope he's not dead. But then it also by the end of it, you're like, well – there was no kind of big moment of success, and there was no kind of big sacrifice and stuff. You know, it's kind of fun.
Interesting, because if you read the, like, at the end of the comic, it shows, like, basically their pitch for it. And, or I don't know if it's a pitch or what exactly it was, but apparently their initial pitch, Kilowog, does die. So
maybe they just decided not to because they liked him so much.
Yeah.
They realized it was the strongest part of it.
I mean, Kilowog. Like, it makes sense. Who doesn't like Kilowog?
Yeah. I mean, that's like I said, I like that they disseminate it so much. And it's interesting because it's like you can sort of see as the book is playing out, almost like the writing process. Like the guy's like, oh, how do I do Green Lantern? Let's make it like, can't use a costume, but gotta have something looks kind of like the costume. That's cool. Okay, let's make it like a space horror movie. Okay, we need a Russian guy because there's always a Russian guy in the space horror movies that fucks it up. Okay, there's crazy, creepy aliens. Okay, great. So how do we do the thing? Oh, we have to have a moment where someone gets trapped out in space and is going to die and everyone's looking up at the space window because they always do that in horror movies. And then that happens. And then Hal gets the ring. You're like, okay, this is actually translating very well so far. And then they go somewhere and they're like, all right, now we got to go to the second act. What's the second act? Kilowog's the best. Let's do Kilowog. And then they do like this friendly Kilowog second act and they turn him into this big gentle giant. You're like, okay, this is really kicking it too. And then like he gets to like page 100 and he's like, oh shit, I have 20 pages left. And then he's like, like everything else I want to do in a Green Lantern comic. And so it really hurts the story. And while it's fun at the end, it also – Hal's characterization is so interesting because he doesn't have as much personality as we're used to the character having. But that's okay because we're getting the sense that he's like, fuck Earth. I hate everything. You know, I just want to watch grass grow and stuff. And then by the middle of it, you're like, oh, he kind of has some kind of moral temerity. And then like it's overshadowed by everything else that goes on. Like basically this should have been about the physicist who figured everything out. Like, you know, but it was about the guy who – had the bad plan. So without going too far, whatever, but it was very much like exciting and interesting, but it felt like sort of a workshop in action, and by the end of it was just so cluttered with what was going on that it was kind of hard to follow. But
can we talk about the ending? Like
which part?
Like the I guess is the epilogue, maybe the
part where
he gets back to Earth.
It might as well be I stepped over my joke. Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah.
Joke. Sorry.
Sort of, right, yeah.
I really beefed that one. Anyway.
Okay, Randy, what are you saying?
That was terrible. So he gets back to Earth, and I guess it's alluded to, like, there's a one-party system now.
Yeah, like the post-Trump world or something.
But they don't, like, allude to, like, that being a horrible thing in the world. Like... And then it's just like,
I mean, it's one of those.
So this guy is president, and I don't have a job, and you're bad,
right? Like it's a bad thing for the character who we're ostensibly supposed to like, but only really got like three pages of. You know, like it's a character who, obviously, like Hal likes her, so we're supposed to like her, but you know she was only in the beginning and the end. So, but it's one of those things where like. It's not a post-apocalyptic universe, right? But, like, yeah, one-party system, like, you don't have to say, like, this is a bad thing. It's like, this is bad for the character you like, so it's bad. It doesn't need
to
be, like...
Well, and to be fair, and that's the problem, too, is that the kind
of... Dr. Evil, like...
Well, yeah, maybe, like, and that's another thing, too, like, there's certain levels where I appreciate that Hardman and Bicko, like, step back and don't kind of hit you over the head thematically. Like, there wasn't a lot of, like, moments where Hal's like, oh, my God, diversity is great. But, like... The problem is the end kind of does sort of hit you on the nose. Like, it's not so much like this lady's – like, the dialogue with the woman implies that there's another reason that she doesn't get the job that doesn't have to do with competence, like implying that this one-party system is actually denigrating certain people, you know, and like that – okay, so it is bad. But then – and then it's based on like a private company deliberately blowing up part of the world or something and Hal just kind of glossing over it. Like, it's almost like you guys are being a little too subtle about this and then you're also being – like way too overt, like at the same time. So it's a little disorienting, you know, but as you said, it's like, I thought the same thing, like, oh, I guess this isn't post-apocalyptic, but it seems like it is, you know? And it also reminds me that they said at one point that they were going to try to make all the Earth ones be in the same universe. And I'm like,
well, say that.
Hopefully that's not going to happen. Cause you know, that's the, first off, that's not the fun of it. Right. But then it's also like, this is clearly like a near future, like anti, you know, like anti-progressive world and stuff. So, you know, whatever. But again, like I said, at the end, when Hal's even like, you know, the world is so much bigger than we possibly imagined and stuff. And like, I don't know if that really tracks with how he starts it because he like wants to leave Earth because it sucks so bad. But then he wants to go back because he knows, I guess, because he knows there's a chance for something better. And he learned that by being out there and seeing things so diverse. But like I said, the book kind of either tiptoes around it or maybe like I get a sort of sense that it was all like, last minute written, because weren't they working on this for like a year? And maybe like the last minute they were like, let's throw some like, you know, anti right wing slight like stuff in here, which I'm fine with. But like, so it sort of feels like maybe that's part of it. But yeah, very slapdash.
I mean, that's like, that is the main ending of the book. The other ending of the book is still the Guardian thing. The Guardian thing being that the Guardian set up how to blow up the, you know, blow up the planet.
You sound elated about that, Eric.
Yeah.
I meant like, oh yeah. I meant to be like, oh yeah, like nonchalant. Like, but now it sounds like I really like it. No, I don't care.
I thought the other way. I thought you were like, oh yeah, that was fucking terrible. Like, that's what I heard.
The other setup
is that the Guardian, the mysterious Guardian that comes out of the lantern telling Hal Jordan to, you know, the game plan, which is like to kill everyone, is in fact evil and set up the Sinestro Corps or the Yellow Lantern.
Well, I was just saying, like, out of the 10 years you've known me, when have I ever been excited by a last page reveal of the Sinestro Corps? Like, that's like my one enemy.
Only in the first.
Hold on, it wasn't the last page. It was like 4 pages before the last.
Right. Well, yeah, last minute. Reveal of like the Sinestro Corps. That's like the most, like, you, I said, like, there were so many different versions of the Green Lantern origin, and this one diverts itself so far from all of them, but it still ends the exact same way they all end, with like a big Sinestro Corps reveal. Yeah.
The funniest thing about the whole sequence is that I'm like, man, I don't even know why this is here. Like, this is, you could have straight up saved that for, like, you know, for a different book and like let that be.
That felt so movie too, like, not in a bad way, right? Movie pandering, like, of like, hey guys, what about the sequel though, right?
Much like the show at the end of the
movie. At the end of the actual Green Lantern movie, yeah.
As they've done in every single, like, I think they should have ended it, maybe if you wanted to do Yellow, just have the Lantern go out and be like, the Guardian go out and be like, well, you know, there's other forms of energy out there or something like that. Or just literally have him hold up a fragment of yellow energy and be like, you know, plan B. You know, like, something cute. But, you know, nothing
also,
so
Also, by the way,
like,
it doesn't make sense, because he's like, their problem was always they had too much will. So here's all these other people who are not necessarily humans, but, like, they're also not robots. So, like, they're still people. Like, what?
I think here's the biggest problem with this Earth One, right, is that essentially it's supposed to be like a, as you said, like a more open, mainstream, palatable version of the Green Lantern. But like, and I hate to say it because I don't love the guy, but Geoff Johns kind of already did that. Like, when he did the Secret Origin, it was pretty much close to exactly what you really should see. Like, Secret Origin is more like Green Lantern Earth One than, at least in terms of their mission statement, than this was, you know. And like, also, I'm a huge fan of First Flight, the Maloney Green Lantern, you know, and like, and I'm like, I don't see how this was better than that. And it just seemed like I said, part of it was good. I liked it more than you guys did. But part of it felt like it was just different for the sake of being different, but then felt the need to be just like it at the end. So it was a little schizo.
I thought the art was great, though. I disagree that you liked it more than everyone else did, because everyone else had glowing things to say about it, and you had the most negatives.
Well, to be fair, I have the most negatives about everything. Like,
that's true.
My children.
I mean,
it's so sad.
But I still think that Brandon and Frankie liked it more than you or I did. And I don't think any of us disliked it, which is a good thing, right? Like, we all had positive things to say about it. But I agree. I mean, I think it does a very different thing than First Flight, right? Like, First Flight is again, it's hitting on the Green Lantern universe. It's hitting the beats. It's showing us the people. This is the universe. You know, this is not necessarily the universe you're used to, but it's very much like the universe you're used to. Whereas this is very different from the universe you're used to. You know, the Green Lantern rings don't seek their bearers out by will.
Yeah,
that's a very different thing. You know, like, it's doing a very different thing.
Just in terms of the goal. I mean, like, I don't think it's fair to say this is worse or better than Secret Origin, because Secret Origin is kind of unreadable if you don't know a lot about Green Lantern, in the same way that Earth One Batmans are kind of unreadable if you don't know a lot about Batman. And this, you could probably hand this to someone and they would understand most of it until like the last 10 pages, and then they'd be very confused, you know. But
which by the way is a good, like, another, again, a comic book movie thing they do, which is here's the thing that everyone will understand, and then, by the way, Adam Warlock's coming, you know, like that kind of thing,
right?
Where it's for comic book fans, Adam Warlock coming is huge. For everyone else, like, oh, I guess that's a sequel tease, you know.
Sure. But like, I gotta ask you guys quick, I mean, just the idea of that, like, even the first, I mean, really the first 10 pages, first 20 pages are the ones that are so different. Like, don't you guys get the sense of, like, as Nine was sort of saying, like, there is a little bit missing from the story when there isn't, like,
I was going to bring
that up. I mean, especially a guy named, like, the idea that – I think the idea that the guy named Volkov stole the battery, stole the ring. He's the one who puts it on first. He accidentally kills himself. Like, that seems to me like the writer deliberately being like, I have to be different just to be different. Look, like, it for, doesn't even really
for 2 seconds, I thought that Volkov was going to be the Green Lantern the whole time. Like,
that's how different it is.
You know what? That would have been very interesting, right? Like, if they were like, we're going to fake you out with Hal Jordan is there, but Hal Jordan dies, Volkov's Green Lantern. Oh, okay. All right, that works.
That twinged for me for a second, and then I had kind of like horror dreams of like the next 30 years of continuity of different writers trying to use Volkov. You know, like every time that the Green Arrow TV show.
What if Volkov comes back and he's Volthoom?
don't say it. And then like it reminds me of like the Green Arrow TV show or like the Flash TV show, where they'll introduce or even the original, they'll introduce new things, and then the comics will be so eager to use them that I'll be seeing like. Felicity Chloe Sullivan for the next 20 years, you know.
All right, so let me bring this up because it is like the story, the way the story works is very reminiscent to many other Green Lantern storylines that we had. It does sort of like run into a weird like spacing and story problem by towards the end of it because it pretty much does devolve into a regular Green Lantern storyline. I do find it funny that you know I wish the back half of the set of the third act and the second act were a different book. I will say that. I wish the book dealt more with Hal Jordan and not knowing what the hell the Green Lantern was for like the entirety of his like the first part of the story. Like if it was gonna be a three act structure instead of showing us the core, it should have just been Hal. Second book, we knew there was gonna be a second book just like all the other titles because like volume two. Yeah, like going into volume two, I felt that it should have been this. Like, you know, the story about the core and story about the mythos of it being destroyed, and there are no other Green Lanterns. The rings are weaker than what they were supposed to be. Like that felt like more like this is second volume stuff. Everything should have been like
That's a good point, actually. Like, could you have ended the story with like just him and Kilowog? Maybe they go back to Oa, or maybe something, right? Or maybe he spends the whole book on Bolivac's Vic, and they go back to Earth or something.
Might be interesting if he doesn't even go to Bolivac's Vic, right? Like, if the whole thing is the horror movie thing with the Green Lantern, and you have
and the Manhunter
and the
right? Dead civilizations and stuff. No, I don't. I actually don't mind him meeting the alien, but I do think the way it is, it plays a little abrupt, you know. And I think it requires some like pre Green Lantern.
I actually thought the beats were all fine. I thought the structure was all fine. It did have a little trouble in a couple of places, you know, with the pacing ramping up too much in the third act.
Yeah, what about that woman who like the thief he meets that he breaks out with, and she steals the ring, and then she dies, and it has no. Yeah, it has like basically that's just to get him out of the prison line and into the old battery, and it's like it's such a completely pointless diversion of six pages and stuff. It just little stuff like that was like. Were you just watching Star Trek VI and you're like, I want to do that. Like, you know, or something, and like you just kind of put in the book that, you know, yeah. I don't know, like, you know what I will say, though? I do want to say some positives because I did want to try to make it like I actually like it. No, but like, I actually laughed out loud at a couple of lines. There's, like I said, the teach me moment, and then I actually laughed out loud at the, like, pleasant laugh out loud when, you know, Kilowog was like, well, what do you know about it? Because that's like that Jeff Johns and Earth One Batman subversion kind of thing. That was funny. And actually, I kind of had a little bit of a cheer moment at the end when Hal started making constructs and stuff. I thought that was kind of cool, but he's like, I'm going to try something. And then they don't really beat you over the head with it. Maybe they should have had a bit more of a larger panel for it. But like, I like it. No one's ever really done that before.
Yeah, I think I missed that, actually.
Oh, yeah, because at the very end, they're fighting. They're like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm going to try something. And he makes like a spade or something. And then he makes like little pincers and stuff. Like, and they don't treat it like a big deal. He didn't make a boxing glove, so they passed the test. But like, yeah, but there was a few like moments where I was like, and I think you wouldn't really get that from. I got that because the story itself, so much of it is so grounded that when little things happen, like I'm such a jaded Green Lantern fan at this point that someone putting constructs together the first time makes me like want to shit. I hate that. I'm just Jessica Cruz's whole arc. I'm like, I don't care. I just don't fucking care. You know, but like I still got a little bit of a fist pump about it here because the kind of like at least the solid groundwork of the first 60 pages of just like, you know, it's weird, it's shitty, it's dark. He's apathetic and, you know, like everybody he meets dies and stuff like and then pincers like it was cute. I liked it.
I love how you want to say something positive about it. You want I just want to say you want to like 50 things that were like you know you shit it on and we're like ah, but it was cute. And I was like, thank you.
I mean, no. Like I said, it's When I said I liked it more than everybody, because I guess I'm thinking more of like our Preach talk about it, where we were all kind of like, it's good, but what's special about it? You know, and at that point I hadn't finished it yet when we were talking about it. So there's just, I think the art is so, it's almost like the first half and then the way the art is was almost like such an overpromise for what it was. But yeah, I really like the art actually. Like I thought, I mean, I think
Gabriel
almost
Hartman
like
does a really good job with this.
I think he should have let himself loose a little bit at the end when everything starts flying. It seems like you're doing too much per page. You know, that's the part where you need to have big panels and stuff. You know, but yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, me too, Brandon. Like I want to bring it up because again, they pretty much answered the question about me even asking. Did you think like, you know, the second half of the story was, you know, should have been a separate volume altogether rather than it being like lumped into one?
No, because I think 144 pages is a lot of fucking pages. Like, you can get a lot done. Like, people have made classic comic book issues with much, much less. Like, so, like, it's certainly possible. And I'm not sure I really want, like, no offense to you guys, but I don't think I want to see Kilowog Hal for 144 issues, you know? I mean,
it could have been completely different. It could have just been Hal, and it could have been much like.
Yeah, no. I'm sure there's a story out there that might be interesting. Sure, I think what they had here was enough to tell a sufficiently great Green Lantern story. Mm-hmm. I think it deviated from that in very crucial moments. And that's why we're left with probably, and I don't want to be beholden to this great, but it's probably just an average story, you know? And that's not in comparison to Secret Origin or Emerald Dawn or any other origin story. It's just, take it as it is. It has its moments, but there are a lot of moments that take away from the overall story. And or for the overall novel, and it's just an average story.
You know, and I'll say the last thing about it, right? I think I don't disagree with that, and I think the strength I believe the writer was trying to pull out was like, I'm going to do something really kind of generic and straightforward and average, but the details are going to save it. And I think there are moments where the details save it. Like at the end, there's a bit where as they're saving the world, as they're bringing the battery out, they show a wide shot in space. And you see Tomar Ray, or Tomar 2, whoever, you see one of the Tomars, implying that Green Lanterns are still on their way there.
That's like racist. All... Do you see somebody of the ray of the planet,
yeah,
Zudar? Probably.
I'm saying it's a Tomar because I'm saying it's the same thing as if you watched a movie, a Green Lantern movie, and they had a guy with black hair and glasses in a suit writing something on a pad. You'd assume it was Clark Kent. Or someone in the Clark Kent family, like his sister. Like, anyway, you see a Tomar out in space, and like the implication being that like a bunch of Green Lanterns are on their way, but hadn't got there yet by the time they saved the day. And that's like a weird, needless detail, but that's fun. Or like in the middle of the fight, when Kilowog shows up, and Hal's like, "Oh, Kilowog, thank God!" And then Kilowog says, "Thank who?" Like, and they don't like beat you over the head with this joke, like Kilowog, you know, doesn't have God in his religion or his culture. I'm like, no, it's just funny. He doesn't know what the fuck you're talking about because it's a human phrase. And then even a little bit at the end where that random lady is – the slave is there and he gives her the ring and he's like – she's like, why do I get a ring? He's like, fuck, I don't even know. Like, you know, and it's like – it's kind of – I think that kind of falls flat a little bit. But it's like that's the fun of it, the little details and stuff and like, you know, that Hal has one moment of inner monologue where he's just floating out in space and he's in shock and he's talking to himself and stuff like that. So –
in particular, that moment really bothered me, actually.
Where he talks to himself?
No, where he gives the ring to one of the survivors. And it's like, Kilowog literally tells him, we just had this conversation. You don't know why, like if there's people out there that are worthy of this, and you're giving them a super weapon.
Yeah, I don't think
like,
the theme
whatever.
Justifies that enough.
But, yeah. Like, your friend just died.
I think the theme was supposed to be, like, you know, trust. Or something.
I think it's like the argument is supposed to be like we anybody could do some shitty thing, but we just make ourselves do the right thing in that level where it's like, you know, it's like, yeah, she could be a shitty person, but like we have to, it's
well, and then
power,
there was also
you know?
The heavy handed, like in the middle of it, which was like, what if someone bad has a ring? Then we'll have to stop them. Right. And obviously talking about Sinestro.
Yeah. And then Sinestro shows up, and like in three panels, all he does is like whine about shit. It's like he's they're like, let's do that. He's like, that's not gonna work, you guys. Like, shut up, Sinestro.
I honestly enjoyed the fact that he was he wasn't like, you know, the calculating space Hitler that we've known him for years, and this is the worst decision. Like, I don't know, guys. I really think this is a bad idea. Like,
I feel like he said something a little fascisty at one point, like let them die or something.
Yeah,
but
I think he did say that. Yeah,
but like still, it was. I like the idea of him being like Melvin Sneedly or like or something like that. Like, you know. Like, he's the nerdy kid in Captain Underpants who keeps telling on George and Harold or something. You know, but that's Sinestro. Like, I like that idea.
Here's my, like, going back to that scene where he gives away the ring, it's not even like he gave it to somebody that was helping another refugee, or, like, he just gave it to some dude that was in water. It just... It
was gave it to her because she was having...
That was a woman.
She made it very clear. Herself.
Did they make it clear?
Yeah, they said she and her. Yeah. Like, it was pretty clear. Well, it was also, there was like a lot of, I don't know, like, I felt like somewhat heavy-handed feminist overtones, right? Like,
maybe the Orisha thing.
Not heavy-handed.
Not I don't know. Not that feminism is bad, but like, the Orisha thing is there was at the end that, you know, like you were saying, she didn't get the promotion probably because she was a woman or a minority or whatever,
or a lesbian or something. Like, it wasn't clear. Yeah.
But like all the leaders of like basically any character created for this book was a woman, except for like two.
Well, I wouldn't even say that. I wouldn't even say necessarily overt feminist. I think maybe a bit of a tokenist, maybe like, you know, maybe there was a past that they went through and they're like, oh, this doesn't really pass the Bechdel test, or like there aren't a lot of female characters and there could be. So let's like, even the idea of like Orisha shows up and she's a badass and let's make her the leader at the end. It did seem like a bit of a kind of like, well, let's just have a little bit of progressive value in here, which I normally don't mind, but like, you know, and I don't because I'm a huge progressive guy and ram into everybody's throats. I don't care. But like, there was a little bit of a kind of like, this seems a bit like tokenism, you know. But
tokenism is probably more accurate than overtones.
SJW, like, yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I do want to say my favorite thing about that moment is he goes up to the woman and he's like, hey, they're Green Lanterns where you're from. And she's like, oh. And he's like, well, there are now. Like, you know, and then I think, like, we're supposed to kind of just, and then even Killer was like, what the fuck, dude? And he was like, what if she sucks? And he's like, yeah, well, she's going to do her best. We're all doing our fucking best, dude. Back the fuck off, dude.
Yeah, like by the way, you didn't know shit until yesterday. So what the fuck, whatever, 3 months ago.
Killer knew even less.
With his beard.
That was great.
Like,
yeah. And I like that Killer, like, he was like considered also the Melvin Sneedly of his planet, like the space cop show up and they're like, what are you doing here, Kilowog? He's like, I'm helping. And it's like, oh, you just realize that Kilowog is like the babysitter's club in this mystery town situation. Like, everybody thinks he's like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo and it's like, oh, this idiot's trying to get involved and stuff. You know, like, that was kind of cool. But also, I like how the Bowl of Vaccines were like so nice about it. Like, basically, it's Hal and Kilowog's fault that they're all slaughtered and they're just kind of like, huh. Chickens, like, they don't like really seem that mad at them when they show back up. They're not like, hey, you just fucking inflicted our peaceful Sweden into like intergalactic war, you asshole. They're just like, Kilowog, okay, yeah, you can help. Like, it's really fun. It's like the whole plan is like Planet of John Goodman's. It was like really like completely like nice and
stuff. it was pretty funny. I would say the actually also did enjoy how Green Lantern, I mean, going back to like, you know, how just gets that one alien the ring, I enjoy the fact that Green Lanterns aren't, like, you know, chosen. I did enjoy the fact that Green Lanterns are pretty much like, hey, there was a Green Lantern on my planet. He died, or they, you know, they died, and then I got their ring, and that's how it works. Like,
I agree with you.
In many ways, it comes from, going back into Green Lantern lore, it comes from, like Orisia. Like, Orisia, her father, I believe it was, something. Her father was Green Lantern on her planet, and then their ring was passed down to her. It was always like this weird thing of that point of like, was she chosen because she was fearless, or was she chosen because her dad was like the last guy?
Was Tomar 2 chosen because he was fearless, or was he chosen because they just wanted to keep drawing Tomar Rae again?
Yeah,
it's like because they couldn't tell the difference because they're racist like me.
Like Brandon.
Yeah.
So I did enjoy that, you know. It also follows into like, you know, the Kyle Rayner, how he got the ring. Like, it's pretty much like, hey, you were there at the right time. Like, you know,
bugs me because that seems like it's almost like existentially that frightens me.
Well, don't worry, it got retconned 7,000 times.
And then retconned back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah.
But that's so funny because every time that becomes the continuity, it makes me like, I have fucking my skin start, I have hives immediately. Because the idea of somebody being like landing in an alleyway is like, hey, here's a nuclear football. Good fucking luck, dude. I don't know. Like, that makes me terrified. Like,
that's true. Okay,
I think the continuity is still he was chosen in an alley, but it's that he was chosen in an alley, but also Gantt saw the potential in him.
Yes. I think ultimately,
there was that one continuity where he goes back to Guy Gardner and goes, hey, Guy, I know you're already a Green Lantern. He's a right. He goes like, nah, fuck off. And then he goes, I only got enough power to go to an alleyway in the middle of New York where some guy's bombing.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, too, right?
Because there was continuity where he was like, no, I could tell, you know, who you are. And I think the famous line is like, you'll have to do it and stuff. And like, I love that line. But there was a sense where it's like, maybe you're not the most fearless dude, but you're fine for now. And that was like the idea that Kyle had something in him that was cool, but not super cool. And that ended up working out for him and stuff. But like the idea of giving somebody a fucking AK-47 is like, you're the sheriff now and running away. Like that's, oh God, no.
that's true. I mean, that's a fright. That's terrible and frightening. And also like, you know, hits on our fear that, you know, any maniac can get a gun if we're going to shoot a
gun. And I think you make a good point that it's like they're basically just weapons that are given to people in this continuity. And that's why I'm more offended by the idea of like a yellow core being introduced at the end.
Yes.
Because it's interesting if you'd say they're all cops, you know, and then like make it more like they're cops so that some cops can be assholes, some cops can be good guys. We don't need an evil cop team. Like there is no such like in the real world, there's criminals and gangsters. But there's no evil police. Like you can't like if you're a criminal, you don't go to the evil cops for help.
There's definitely a bunch of
no. I'm saying there are evil policemen, but I'm saying
but
like
there's not like there's not like an evil police.
I know. There's not a sign that says evil police.
Yeah, there's not like an upside
right,
down police
right outside
badge
the street of good police corps.
Yeah,
right next door.
Don't get confused as to which police corps you're supposed
you
to go.
You can join the good police or the evil police.
Well, like one of them is like the police force, and the other one is force police, and you're like, okay, wait a second, like, yeah, I don't know which one. No,
I did want to say that, you know, like going back to that, is that I did find it interesting, and I did like it, only for the fact that you know what it means for the story. The story it's supposed to mean is that yes, these are very powerful tools, but they only are good because of the people who use them. Like you know, it's not just like, you know this whole like, you know anyone can be an asshole. It's like no, these people are good. Like you know are. You know, morally trying to do their best. And that's all we can ask for someone, like, to do their best.
In theory, to do their best.
Yeah, and I think the crowning moment of awesome is supposed to be that Hal calls for help and all the guys from across the galaxy who are hiding come and help and stuff, which it doesn't hit me impactfully like that. I think there's just a little bit of the way the story is drawn and paced, it doesn't hit me like that. But I do like the implication that once everybody land, it's like six or seven guys that don't know what they're doing, and they're all kind of like, do you want to try this? Like, no, it's stupid. Like, you're stupid. Like, no, wait a second. Okay, I saw this in a movie. That's not going to work. There's no physics. Like, I like the idea that, like, the physicist shows up and it's like, no, the Luke Skywalker plan's not going to work, guys. Like, you know, like, I like the idea that, like, it's just a bunch of guys that are like, fuck. Like, you know. So that was more exciting for me than, like, the everybody, you know, heroically responds to Hal and stuff, but... You know, so yeah, there's definitely potential in the way this universe has been set up. I just wish, you know, I don't know, whatever the instinct, I don't know if it was writer instinct or if it was editorial mandate or something, but I wish he had kind of followed the let it breathe instinct a bit more.
I agree with you.
The end. Yeah.
So I guess that's it. I guess we're pretty much like positive. We were positive across the board. Like there were some things that we saw that could have been changed here and there. But the story was still pretty strong, and we you know there it's still an interesting read. We do highly recommend checking it out if you're a fan of the Green Lantern mythos and if you're a fan of Green Lantern origin stories. Because again, we've had at least four different Hal Jordan origin
there's
stories.
There's so many. Let me get mad that this is so different. Fuck you. Like, there's so many other ones. Read a different one.
Yeah. So, Brandon, what do you want to ask?
All right. If we weren't such avid Green Lantern fans, right?
Would we enjoy this?
No, not would you enjoy this. Would you read the sequel?
Oh, yeah. I would.
So. Yeah. Certainly I would. I wouldn't be as excited about it as I think I would be with my high voice, but like, no, but,
I mean, no, first of all, if I wasn't a hardcore Green Lantern fan, I wouldn't have read this one.
I try all the Earth ones. Even
right. No. I'm just saying, me personally, I haven't read any of the other Earth ones. I wouldn't have read this one. Would I read the sequel? Like maybe if it came across, you know, like, if someone handed it to me and said, "Hey, read this. You read the first one," I would read it. Yeah.
I'd be like, "Is Kilowog in it?" Like, and then, you know, then if they said, "Yeah," I'd be like, "Yeah, I'll read it."
Yeah.
But Brandon, would you?
No, I have zero interest in a sequel.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, no, the 10 epilogues we got, garbage. So,
well, it's a good thing we are Green Lantern fans, and we also do this podcast.
Yeah, and we will be reading the sequel in 2 years. In 2 years, when we haven't done the podcast for a year, and bring the podcast back specifically to talk about Volume 2 of Earth 1.
To me, it's like, to do so.
Did it? They just Brandon just quit the podcast on air? Like, it's like over this? Like, it wasn't that bad. Like,
I will also say, by the way, Eric, you were saying if you're a Green Lantern fan and you didn't like this because it's different, like, that's the point. Like, you just didn't get it.
Well, sure.
Literally, the point is that it's different. That's the entire stated purpose, is it's different. Like, if you just say Green Lantern, it's different on the cover.
10 pages. And yeah, exactly. If you didn't get to the first 10 pages and were like okay, well, devil's advocate, right? The first 10 pages, the writer is essentially sticking his thumb, like, up his nose at you, or whatever the expression is, like, hand up your, whatever. Fucking, he's doing a rude gesture towards you.
I'd bite my thumb at you, good sir.
Yeah, super Green Lantern fan. Like, he's doing that in the first 10 pages. So either that pisses you off and you're not going to read it, or that you're like, okay, that's what he's doing, so I have to understand that Volkov is now going to be a very important part of the Green Lantern mythos for the next 50 years. Like, you know, so, yeah.
But again, this is an out of continuity. Like, this is an out of continuity thing. The entire point of it is we are going to be different. This isn't, you know, this isn't your.
But to be fair, okay, I do want to ask one last question before we go. To you guys, what is like the idea of that? Is it an Elseworlds then? Like, at what point does this be kind of break the mission statement of it being what it should be?
Well, what's the mission statement?
Well, introduce a number of DC heroes to a new generation.
Yeah, that's dumb. That's not what it does.
Well, no, I think it definitely does. Is it enough of a? Is it enough? Is it close enough? Like, you know, with it's hard to talk about it without comparing to the other ones. And if you guys haven't read the other ones, I know Frank has, but you know, it's also like to say that's what the Wonder Woman book was is absolutely insane. So have they just completely
I don't know, because I just those words to introduce a blah 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 whatever. Is like that screams Ultimate Comics to me, and this is so insanely different from Ultimate Comics, right? Like, which is
it's sort of like Ultimate X-Men, you know, like as if it's like written by somebody who had X-Men explained to him very quickly, and then he had to write a comic about it and stuff, which isn't bad. You know, I remember at the time thinking Ultimate X-Men was pretty cool for just that reason, but it isn't like Ultimate Spider-Man where someone's like, "I've read these comics a million times, and I just want to put the internet in them and stuff." So,
yeah, to try to compare this comic series. To Ultimate Spider-Man, in no way does
no, absolutely not, and I wouldn't do that. But that their official mission statement clearly is the same as that was, right? Like,
actually really similar because as the Ultimate lines kind of expanded, they became less and less to do with the initial characters. You know, like by the time you got to the Ultimates, it was kind of like the Avengers, but only in name. Like, everything was so completely different than the Avengers that it would once in a while dip into it. And whereas I guess this is not exactly true because Wonder Woman was at least intentionally supposed to be a distillation of all the Wonder Woman stuff there is.
Like,
and
I just can't imagine somebody going and dropping $25 on Green Lantern Earth 1 and then being like, okay, now I'm going to wait 2 years for Green Lantern Earth 1 Volume 2. And that's your way to introduce somebody to the Green Lantern mythos.
Yeah, I would say, like, I would say that, yeah, to the idea of somebody being like, well, where can I start to learn about Green Lantern? If you hand them Earth 1, you're like basically saying, also never read another Green Lantern comic besides this, as opposed to...
Whereas something like, again, Ultimate Comics, something like Ultimate Spider-Man has the same mission statement, you know, by the point it finished, it did have a bunch of backstory to it, but if you didn't have a basic knowledge of Spider-Man, you can hand somebody Miles' first appearance and be like, here you go, read Miles.
It's tricky,
Miles.
Too, because Ultimate Spider-Man, I think, I don't know how much I just thought it was really cool and exactly what it was trying to be, or it just ended up being really good. You know, like, it was fun to see them adapt different villains and stuff, but
there's also a reason that Ultimate Spider-Man was the only Ultimate series that lasted
that's still talked about today.
Right and then that's the thing of it was good. You know, whatever Brand has to say about the Mark Bagley art, it was good. But whereas Earth 1 is it's just, you know, if what it's trying to do is the same thing as that, it's doing it in a very different way, and I think it's doing it in a way that doesn't necessarily I don't know, doesn't do what it's trying to do.
Yeah, but it's also like not, it doesn't quite fit as a Elseworlds or like an, because there's no high concept. It's not like, what if Green Lantern was this? It's like, what if Green Lantern was in a future where, you know, there was false flag operations that caused a one system government, and it, but there was also space mining and it was just like, that's so different. But then once you get out into space, it's really similar, but then you go back to Earth. So it's,
I would say, again,
what if you were Green Lantern halfway to Blade Runner? Like, I don't, you know, yeah. It's like,
I would say for myself, like if I were to be asked, like, hey, what's a good Green Lantern book to read? Would this be the, you know, at the top of my recommended reading for Green Lantern, like normal Green Lanterns? Probably not. But I would say give it a shot, because if you want to know, in essence, a core, like the core of what a Green Lantern story is, technically this. It is pretty much this story, you know.
Yeah, there isn't really a good jumping on point for Green Lantern anyway, so you might as well give him something good.
Yeah, like this, like, you know, if for new readers, I'd probably say, like, you know, read most of what Jeff Johns, like, brought
no.
in. You know, the whole, you know, freaking set as a core war.
I mean, yeah, I jumped on Rebirth, like... Yeah.
They jump on a Rebirth.
Well, that most people did, right? But it's so continuity heavy.
But
such a buy-in.
Not really.
But I think. Well, no, it isn't right. Like I think Rebirth does a really good job of saying, here's continuity and here's how it goes. Like this, we have all this continuity.
Sure.
In it. Here's how it makes sense. And then also,
and Recharge does a good job for the core. If you're like brand new to, like, you know, this whole team book aspect.
Yeah, no. If you are looking to jump on, like, know what Green Lantern's about, that's what I toss at you. I toss you Rebirth, Recharge, and Secret Origins probably.
Yeah, those would be like, you know, the top runners for recommended.
But I feel like, and I'm not gonna argue.
I would say this one still will still be one. Like, I would say, like, hey, depending on how, like, who's asking, I would say, yeah, check this out.
I wouldn't disagree. I would probably just – I wouldn't disagree, but I think if you really think about what happens in Rebirth and what happens in Recharge, and then think about Secret Origins and how, like, Secret Origins, like, deliberately ends in a way where there's, like, decades of story difference, and it doesn't even get up to the point. So it's like – that's what I mean. I think if I was going to say to somebody, how do I jump in on Green Lantern, I would give them First Flight. Like, fuck it. Watch First Flight.
I mean, yeah. I think that's fair too, right?
But
I think I'd hand them –
I would always tell everybody – watch the animated series.
Well, yeah, right. But no, I think First Flight's actually a good call, because that's like, what, 60, 90 minutes, right? Like that's
yeah, 70 minutes and distillation of the
super,
and it's also
super
great.
Crazy, right? And but like, yeah, I'd also I think before I'd hand them Earth One, I'd hand them Emerald Dawn. Like, I don't think I
sure
like which hits
sure
the same sort of beats, but also like it's just the problem with Earth One as a line is if somebody reads Green Lantern Earth One and says, oh, I want more with this character or this universe, you got nothing, right? But if I hand them Emerald Dawn and they say, oh, I want to read more Green Lantern, great. Now I can hand you this, which is all in the universe. And maybe, you know, continuity changes here and there, but you have the same, a similar idea. And it's the same Hal Jordan, the same Sinestro, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, they can't.
I would also say that, you know,
yeah,
the Earth One series themselves, as much as, Brandon, what was the line again? The Mitchell
it was like a
book?
New generation.
No, I want Brandon to say.
Oh, why?
Because it was like the only line you've been saying like for the past like four times.
Sorry.
Just
I
dub it in.
That out. Yeah, I said it.
What was it? I'm
oh my God. Frank.
It was a way to introduce a new generation of readers to the DC characters or something.
Okay, here we go. Jesus. Right.
It better be very different down than what I just said.
The Earth One line is introducing a number of DC heroes to a new generation.
You fuck! That's literally what I said.
So what I wanted to say with Brandon like repeating that line, I wanted him to say was that it's in many ways not true. Like this line is literally for veteran readers. This like the Earth One series.
True.
This book itself, it's so much for the a person who's known what Green Lantern is. To like excess, like, you know, like knowing what the batteries are about, knowing what the rings are about, knowing who those superfluous characters show up at the very end of the title are about.
Like, yeah, imagine if you told someone, if someone read that and they're like, oh, Green, so what happens in the ethos? I'm like, oh, you know that really nebbish, shitty guy that everyone makes fun of at the end? He's his archenemy. Like, not like you're, you know.
Yeah. This is right, very, very this very much for a veteran
reader. Well, I don't know. I disagree with that. I think you're seeing that because you're a veteran reader, right? But I see a lot of, like I said, movie stuff where you see the battery, right? And you as a veteran reader see the battery and you're like, oh, that's the Green Lantern battery. But somebody who has no idea what Green Lantern is would see that and be like, what's that? What's going on, right? They think the same as the characters do. It's like taking your parents to a superhero movie, right?
I took
my parents to see Black Panther and they weren't sitting there like, oh, that's that. Oh, this is this. Oh, that's, you know, they were like, okay, this is a story that I'm watching and, you know, they got it, whatever they got through the story and they didn't, you know, they didn't get things out of the story that I got, but they got it, right? And where I think it is a similar thing, where a veteran reader sees what you see, this, whereas a new reader would see possibly, you know, something they're interested in, something they want to see later.
I'll tell you the truth. I love reading origin books. I love when they do reboots, and I always try to check them out, because I'm actually a big fan of, like, after 7 years, what is a good writer's distillation of who this character is? I feel like I have a keen eye for that kind of thing. But I would just say, like, something like the Sinestro thing is, it's funny because it's kind of like, what if you read the first Harry Potter book, and in the first Harry Potter book, you know, Snape was like a random dude that ran in the room in the last 5 seconds. It was like, get out of here, guys, it's on fire. It's like, shut up, Snape. And then someone said, oh, yeah, in book six, he's like the main antagonist, whatever. So it's like, there's just, I always use the example of Captain America's shield, right? People saw the Captain America movie, and if you watch the first one and know nothing about Captain America, you'd probably say, this sort of makes a lot of sense. Okay, I can kind of understand why he's dressed like this. But then when he starts throwing, when Tony Iron Man's dad gives him a circular shield, and then he throws it, and it comes around like a discus, like, what audience member is like, thinks it's like, yeah, that makes sense? Like, no, it's fucking baffling and stupid. Like, it's such a kind of leap in. And, like, all of the Marvel movies have that. There's just one level of where every movie is like, what? No. You know, like, but so I always, that's the example. I'm like, they have a certain amount of like, fuck you, this comic's been around since 75 years. If you don't know he's got a shield, eat shit and die. Like, you know, but there's also like, I really do read for that kind of thing. And that's like my favorite thing. And that's one of the reasons I like the Earth One line, because I really liked the Straczynski Supermans, even though they're like super smug. And the second one is a fucking nightmare. But like, they're fun for that reason.
I really liked it, even though the first one was terrible and the second one was goddamn awful.
No, Straczynski's just like arrogant, and then like, and it's so hard to not read past the. And then the second one is really just diabolically stupid.
I just love how you love books, man.
You should love everything. You shouldn't love anything wholeheartedly. Like, there's no such thing.
No, I understand. Let me tell you, like, you said, I really love this, even though I hated it, is basically what you said. Like, that's what I heard.
Even though there's, I don't want, because the problem is when you say you love something, people are like, oh, this idiot loves this thing that has this really obvious flaw. I'm like, yeah, I love this thing. I don't want you to think I think it's not an obvious flaw. Like, you know, like, I don't want you to think there's going to be something that Eric's not going to have 45 minutes worth of complaining about. There's nothing I can complain about for an hour.
Your wedding video.
I have nothing but complaints about my wedding day. It's one of the happiest days of my life.
I just want to see after the birth of your child.
My son wasn't wearing the right shoes. The dogs were supposed to be the ring bearers, and nobody got the fucking basket on them.
I don't know how your wife survives.
I don't know. Well, she is the therapy medication.
Okay.
It's easy.
We do recommend checking it out. I do hope you can, like, find it in your comic stores.
Hold on, Frankie, all that cut out. You dropped out for all that.
What? No. He's recommending therapy and medication, right? Like, that's what he's
recommending. I'm recommending therapy and medication in the form.
It keeps dropping out. What the hell?
Before his good punchline.
It was fine through the whole episode, and then right at the end, Frank keeps dropping out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Am I still here?
You're here. You're here. Here it's just like you're like, yeah, you keep dropping out mid sentence.
That's so weird. Funny, I didn't
know. Good line.
Sorry. Anyway. Again, thank you very much for listening in. Those were our thoughts and our rants about Green Lantern Earth One. Bob.
What the fuck?
Bob. I heard you.
No, volume. He's saying volume.
Volume one? Volume one. Am I sitting there?
Volume one.
Yeah, you're here.
All right, fine. Good. Green Lantern Earth One, volume one. Hopefully you check it out. Pick it up at your local comic book store. Whatever. If you have thoughts and opinions of the book, please drop it. Send us a message over at Green Lantern Corps Twitter and also the Green Lantern Corps forums. We'll definitely want to check out what you have to say. Till then, stay green out there. And Cult is not here to tell me stay gold.
Stay gold. Stay gold.
No.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com. You can email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com, follow us on Twitter @TheGLCorps, or reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814. Check out Kirby Crackle, performers of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com, and the Roy Clark Method, performers of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at royclarkmethod.webs.com.
I have this magic green. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me. It says, how? What have you done with your life? People around you keep dying.